Hi, my name is Cheryl Crow, and I am passionate about helping people navigate real life with arthritis. I've lived with rheumatoid arthritis for 17 years, and I'm also a mom, teacher, and occupational therapist. I'm so excited to share my tricks for managing the ups and downs of life with arthritis. Everything from kitchen life hacks to how to respond when people say you don't look sick, stress, work, sex, anxiety, fatigue, pregnancy, and parenting with chronic illness. No topic will be off limits here. I'll also talk to other patients and share their stories and advice. Think of this as your chance to sit down and chat with a friend who's been there. Ready to figure out how to manage your arthritis life? Let's get started.
Oh, I'm so excited to have my friend Christina Montoya on today, who's a registered dietitian and also my RA twin, because she's had it the same amount of time. We both have one child and they're both boys. So anyway, I would love you to just give a quick introduction, like where you live and, oh, I already gave it away, but what's your relationship to arthritis?
Thank you, Cheryl, for having me here again. I'm really excited about today's topic. And you didn't mention that I'm from Colombia and I live in Canada, but I really like to say this, I'm a woman surviving and thriving with rheumatoid arthritis and Sjogren's and fibromyalgia. Sometimes I'm in surviving mode and other times I'm thriving mode.
Yes, I relate to that.
Right? So like, that's what it is. I started with this journey when I was a child with Sjogren's syndrome. But then at 21, 22, right, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis as well. So what else you would like to know about me?
No, that's perfect. And, you know, today's topic is all about cannabis, CBD, THC, and what is their relationship to arthritis and chronic pain? I know that's a huge topic. There's tons of studies being done, but I know it's something that you personally have delved into. And so, but my question first for you is, what got you interested in delving into this topic in the first place?
Well, first, as you mentioned, I'm a registered dietitian, and I've been a registered dietitian for 15 years now, starting in Colombia. And most recently, for maybe in the past 3 years, I've been very passionate about learning on leading an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, including nutrition, and lifestyle changes. But what really triggered me is that I reached a breaking point in terms of managing my pain when I had my boy in 2019. So basically, I have an early postpartum RA flare-up. I was told after 6 weeks, I had it the next day. I had my boy. It was the most horrible pain I ever had since I was diagnosed. The first things that they offered me was opioids, and I just could not tolerate the side effects, and especially because I couldn't even function with a newborn baby. All my biologists failed. Cimzia, that I've been taking for 10 years, failed. I tried Actemra, failed. Went back to using methotrexate. And then I have a very honest conversation with a new rheumatologist. I love her. And it was a shared decision. We started kind of jumping at ideas. Okay, what is it what we're going to do? So I said, you know what? I'm going to go full force and using medical cannabis. She said, that's fine, but let's try this biologic as well. So I started on Orencia. So that's when I started using the medical cannabis, I particularly found relief from the fibromyalgia pain per se. And so I really wanted to know, okay, so there's gotta be a reason why this is working for me, or is this just a hype of what is happening? And also, I had the huge stigma of being Colombian, and with our history, I was terrified of even mentioning the name of cannabis or marijuana. And so but I said, you know, let me just learn. So very skeptical about the whole thing. I completed a program during the pandemic for the Holistic Cannabis Academy, which was founded by a registered dietitian in the US. So I thought, okay, if she did it, why, if she's learned about cannabis, why can't I? I I got hooked and I said, well, okay, so this is what's happening in the US. I want to know what's happening in Canada. So I continued with a certificate cannabis educator program in Toronto. We was catered more towards medical cannabis. And but then I realized that as a regulated health professional in Canada, I was really not allowed to, you know, prescribe or write medical documents, which I understand. But we're also kind of limited on the amount of the type of education we're providing, which I'm a rebel and I've been advocating for changes.
She's gone rogue. No, I love it. Yeah. So that's, I think that's really difficult for people to figure out. Okay. I think at this point, you know, we're recording this in April of 2022. There's so many stories out there of people who've been helped by this, but yet it's not legal everywhere. And there's like systemic barriers to accessing it as like a potential tool in your toolbox. But so I'm so grateful to have you here to help, you know, unpack a little bit, you know, what is it like, let's say I knew absolutely nothing about cannabis, THC and CBD, which I know a little bit, but it is overwhelming to figure out like the differences between all the terminology. I feel like I'm a newbie with RA again, you know, when people are like, yeah. Wait, what's this? What's a biologic? What's a flare up? Like, what are you talking about? So what are some like basic pointers that you, or basic pieces of information people should know when they're just delving into learning about this?
I think the most important thing and the reason why I started studying more about cannabis is understanding why cannabis works in our body. And it's because we have a system that actually works with it. It interacts with cannabis and it's called the endocannabinoid system. So that system is designed to maintain homeostasis or balance within our body. And it's also responsible for, and it's involved in processes that that involve memory, pain relief, in mood, inflammation, and even reproduction. I don't know about that, but all the endocannabinoid system is the largest, kind of neurotransmitter system, right? That they have receptors everywhere in our bodies. And that's why when you say, well, but cannabis works for everything, it's because we have receptors everywhere, including our skin. So that's why it's so important to really understand that we do have a system that interacts with the cannabis. So we actually, just a very basic, the endocannabinoid system is comprised of three main components. So first, you have the endocannabinoids. So we actually produce endocannabinoids that are similar to the ones that are produced by the cannabis plant. And they're called anandamide and 2-AG. Those are the main endocannabinoids. So I don't know if you heard of the runner's high, but sometimes they used to say that.
Yep. I've experienced that. Yeah. Yeah.
So that is a rise of the anandamide. And it was actually given that name because of the honor of the Sanskrit word bliss. So it means like a supreme joy. So when you're running, you're actually getting a load of anandamide. So you're feeling happier when you're hugging, when you're smiling. Wow. There's a rise of anandamide. So we actually have those components in our bodies that there are ways to nourish that endocannabinoid system even beyond cannabis. And that's something to think about.
Yeah. So basically we already in our body, tell me if this is the right, that we already have this endocannabinoid system and that's not related to any quote unquote drugs or anything. It's a system in our brain and our neurons and our whole body. And it just so happens that, you know, the cannabis plant taps into that. And I'm looking at this Harvard Health page all about the endocannabinoid system, which I'm going to put in the show notes as well. It's really helpful to understand. Cause I'll just preface this. I grew up in the 1980s in the United States where there was this huge push in the early 90s as well for this program called Dare to Keep Kids Off Drugs. And it really worked on me in the sense that it scared the living daylights out of me. And I was like, I'm never going to do any drugs. I'm never going to drink alcohol. I'm never going to smoke pot. And they always talked about marijuana as like the gateway drug to other more hardcore drugs. And there's so many negative things that were talked about it, that when I even hear like endocannabinoid system, I'm like, oh, that, like, that's some bad thing. It's like, no, this is literally in your body already. Like, so anyway, sorry, I already got us off track, but,
no, but okay. you actually, I kind of, gonna tag on that comment at the gateway to drugs. And to me, it has been the gateway to wellness and freedom from drug prescriptions. And I think that's powerful in terms of, it's very personal. Again, like anyone, when you start embarking on a cannabis journey, it's unique, right? And because that endocannabinoid system is as unique as your personality. So that's why we can both take the same CBD oil or take the same cultivar or like known as a strains or cannabis strain. It's the same cannabis, but we may react differently because it depends on what is your body's needs and what so that true. Endocannabinoid system needs. So that's what we cannot just kind of generalize, oh, this strain is for pain and this is for anxiety. Perhaps it might work for you for anxiety. It might work for me for pain.
Right. And you don't know till you try on your own body, right?
Exactly. So I think that's probably the main message, that we do have that system, and we can talk about the whole show here. But I think, and actually something very interesting, there is a neurologist, Dr. Ethan Russo, very kind of well known in the area of cannabinoid research, is that he proposed a hypothesis that patients with fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, and migraines may have a condition called endocannabinoid deficiency, clinical endocannabinoid deficiency, where I think there have been small studies where they have kind of tested the amount of endocannabinoids, but in the spinal fluid. So it's not really something that you can measure in a blood test or something, right? And so it's a theory they have seen, because you've seen that these conditions, they don't have a specific cause, right?
Right.
So, and people, particularly those who have those conditions, respond very well to cannabis. So that's where he kind of brings in this theory.
Okay, awesome. I'm putting these links in the show notes as well. It's so interesting. Okay. So yeah. So first of all, little 101, because I'm sure I already messed up some of the lingo. What's the difference between when I say the words like cannabis, CBD, and THC? Those are the words I hear all the time. Like, what's the difference between those?
Well, first of all, you have to start with a plant. So cannabis is the plant. That sometimes we'll say like, oh, is cannabis the same as, oh, people say, oh, cannabis is the medicinal plant and the marijuana is the recreational. I think you also kind of heard that, right? But in reality, it's just the one plant, it's the cannabis plant. And then this one, it actually has like a separate male plants and female plants. And then the female plants is where we found most of the medicinal ingredients. But there's also, there's probably areas, right, where they're like a hemp. Hemp is also a cannabis plant from the cannabis species. But then there's more control into the amount of THC that they can kind of produce. So the hemp is the one that contains less than 0.3% of THC. So I understand that many legal states in the US, the hemp is legal, right? And so is the use of CBD, but not the cannabis that contains THC. So,
okay. What does THC stand for?
So that THC, so I'm going there. So CBD and THC are like the major cannabinoids. So you remember when I was telling you that we had those endocannabinoids anandamide into AG. So then the plant also produces like a major cannabinoid, it's a concentration of delta 9, or say like a tetrahydrocannabinol, that's the THC, and then the cannabinoid dial, CBD. So they are the largest. They are in the cannabis plant in a large amount, but there are also many other minor cannabinoids, even up to 100, which is still haven't been studied fully.
Okay. Okay.
So that's the difference, right? So just think about endocannabinoids and the phytocannabinoids, because it comes from plants, and that's kind of the relationship.
Okay, awesome. So when you say phyto, it's like P-H-Y-T-O.
Yes.
Right. So that's like from the plants. Okay.
From the plants.
Wow.
And then endo is what we produce.
Okay. Right? Awesome. And then, yeah, what are some things like people, because everyone, most of the people who are listening have some relationship to arthritis or chronic pain. So like, let's talk a little more specifically about how cannabis can affect pain and inflammation specifically.
So specifically, I think what another thing that we really need to understand, when these cannabinoids are present in the plant, they come in an acidic form. They're inactive. Oh, okay. So if you were to take like the plant or the flower, right, and you were to consume it, nothing's going to happen. There's no psychoactive effects to it.
Okay.
So just to see the plant or just touching it or eating it, you're not going to get high.
Okay.
Right. So but that's when you come, that when we heat up the plant, right, is that when we activate those components. So that's when the THC becomes the psychoactive or kind of gives that intoxicating effect, because then it interacts with those cannabinoid receptors that we have. And they're mostly like the CB1 receptors that are located in the brain, and then can give you that sensation of, high and kind of pleasantness, which in sometimes it could be therapeutic, but when it comes to it in excess, then it's just, you're using other reasons. You're not using it for therapeutic reasons. You're just using it for just kind of be happy, be high. But here we're talking more about the therapeutic benefits of these components. The same thing happened with CBD. You have to activate it. But remember that cannabis plant also contains other important components, like the terpenes, which is like the aromatic components that gives it that flavor, like the smell, the distinctive smell, and also flavonoids. So think about like what you find in fruits and vegetables. Cannabis also have that.
It's a vegetable. So, it's like a vegetable. It's a leaf, right?
No. It is a leaf. It is a plant.
Like, okay. I just thought of that. Wow.
But then, yeah. So what is really the effect? In general, actually, in research and animal studies, they have found that both THC and CBD have anti-inflammatory and analgesic effects. And in fact, for patients specifically, like I mentioned, with fibromyalgia, chronic pain, or neuropathic pain, a combination or even a little bit of a THC seems to be more alleviating than just CBD.
And now when we say analgesic, that's pain reducing.
That's pain reducing.
Yeah. Just for people who haven't heard that lingo before. Yeah. I mean, that seems like something that everyone who lives in pain from arthritis is looking for. At some point, what can I do to reduce, especially my inflammatory arthritis, like the autoimmune types like we have, with psoriatic or ankylosing spondylitis or rheumatoid, how can we reduce our overall inflammation? How can we reduce our pain? So it's really significant that this can help.
it really does. And I think we both participated in last year World Pain Summit. So it was a very interesting discussion, because we have one physician who was like completely against it. There's not a sufficient evidence. We're still kind of the early stages. I wouldn't recommend it. Only 1 out of 10 patients are benefiting. I said, to me, that one patient is wow, good for them. But then you have Dr. Clark, who he said, hey, but we have to listen to our patients. Pain is the number one reason patients seek cannabis use. So what is happening here? So that's why he is conducting a research where he is evaluating the effects of cannabis in pain, sleep, and anxiety.
So
I think we really need to consider and appreciate what the patients are experiencing as the research is emerging, as more kind of legalization starts to spread out, right? Because that was really the limitation of doing research.
Yeah.
So what can I say there? So that's why when it comes to pain relieving properties, I highly advise that for me, it's best to really consult a medical care practitioner, right? Even a physician, a nurse practitioner, someone who can guide you if you're going to use this for medical use. I do find, and I think I'm going to mention these two, these great doctors, the Knox doctors.
Okay.
They are a great resource, and they're also advocating for this the stigmatized use of cannabis. Because I'll give you an example. I go to a doctor in the US, I believe that they have qualifying conditions for using cannabis. If my condition doesn't is not in that qualifying list of conditions, then I most likely will go to perhaps a dispensary. And if I'm going to use a dispensary, it will be for medical reasons or therapeutic reasons, but then I'm going to be judged for using it for recreational reasons. So their advocacy lies is like a medical cannabis, like that, even that distinction is damaging, right? Is it cannabis? Is it for personal use? Is it for therapeutic use? Is it for wellness? It's the same plant. What are you using it for?
The thing that when you're talking about the scientist or the doctor who was against it, I think that one of the first questions that we ask when we're doing these cost benefit analyses is, what are the risks? So are there any risks of taking cannabis for people? Can people be allergic to it? Like they can be allergic to any other plant or?
They could. That can definitely, as any other component in nature, you could be allergic to CBD or THC or any other cannabinoids. Here in Canada, I think that's a really good question because there's something that's very specific for Canada, like the Canadian Rheumatology Association actually recommends the use of medical cannabis for the people age 25 plus. But it kind of contradicts a little bit because then cannabis is legal in cannabis for that personal use. So any youth from 18 plus or 19 in most provinces can access it. And so I think that's, we're still kind of under that revision of that information. But something that I really wanted to focus is to see what is the intention, right? Like, what are you really using cannabis? Are you seeking like advice for the medical care provider? Are you talking to your provider about using cannabis? I don't know, people, I have so many patients who are they feel the stigma when they talk about cannabis.
Right. And it's hard because it's like, I'm starting backwards from this bigger belief, which to me is like pain relief is a human right. You know, you have the right to get your pain managed, or pain management is a human right. And so to me, it's like, yeah, especially with the risks, there's not, the risks of marijuana or cannabis, you know, whatever form it is, you know, not as overwhelming as, you know, there's risks to, you know, alcohol, which many people take, you know, and, there's risks to, you know, too much caffeine, there's risks to so many things. So, and there's risks to, and I'm very, very, very pro, you know, Western medicine for rheumatoid arthritis, just because the evidence is so strong for it, but you're suppressing your immune system, you know, during a worldwide pandemic. So that's a risk you're having. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like you're comparing just the small risks of cannabis to nothing, you know, you're comparing it to, you know, if I can get a little bit of my inflammation controlled with, I mean, like you're convincing me now because I still have this mental block about it. I bought some gummies and then I was like too scared to take them. But anyway, the other thing I just wanted to really quick say is, you know, lack of research or lack of evidence doesn't equate to evidence that it's not effective or evidence that it's harmful. And the reasons that you mentioned, you know, and I'm hesitant to say this because you could say that with a lot of things that are really ineffective, like, you know, like things that are like snake oil type stuff, like, oh, well, lack of evidence isn't evidence of a lack. Okay. But with if there's a medic or a something like cannabis that has been illegal, there's a huge barrier to getting research done, like you said. So, and the emerging research is not just research, but there's a pathway in your body for why this works. You know what I'm saying? Like, sorry.
I think you make complete sense. And I think I even sidetracked myself in terms of the risk. So when you compare the cannabis risk to like an opiate risk, right? Like those are the medications that we often use, right? For pain relieving. So the difference is that there's no cannabinoid receptors at the respiratory center in our brain, unlike opioids, right? So that's why you could die from an opiate overdose. You cannot die. I think you have to consume over like 1.5 kilograms of like cannabis really have such a severe effect. And usually if you have any like side effects, they're unpleasant, but they're not life like threatening.
Yeah. And to go back on the, I think I was looking up a little bit as you're talking about, the effect on adolescents, the developing brain. I have read a little bit of, interesting kind of research, or there's still, it's unclear how marijuana use, affects the developing brain. So that's something to look into if you're talking about, a juvenile or adolescent or, but when talking about adults, it seems a little bit more, less, the risks are not as, strong. So
and that's a really good point. And again, the same goes for women, like pregnant women and breastfeeding, even though we probably know women who already use it, or even there have been cases where women with severe like nausea and vomiting, they have found some kind of relief with cannabis. But again, those are the risks that person was willing to take. But when it comes to the general population, and so it's not really advised on pregnant women or nursing women until we have more research on it. Also, people with severe liver disease or cardiac conditions, they should also be cautious. I have some patients with or clients with POTS, I can remember the name of it, right?
Yeah, with the hypertension. Postural orthostatic hypertension.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they have found also a huge sensitivity to THC specifically. So there are situations in which I said, hey, yeah, kind of be cautious. That's why you need to be kind of full disclosure with your practitioner. And it's a way of educating that your rheumatologist as well. There was a small study when I saw, for just even an animal study, not actually human research, but in patients with lupus, it seems that like the consumption of CBD, like a high doses of CBD, seemed to increase the release of a protein in the kidney, like a protein in the kidney. And we don't want that in patients with that lupus. But again, it's very individualized.
Are there any reactions between cannabis and the medications commonly prescribed for rheumatoid arthritis that you're aware of?
No, the one that I could be with caution is if you're on any blood thinners. So, and typically when you don't want to take it alone with the same medication, so that you want to kind of space it out. Mm-hmm. And if you are taking, especially particularly edibles, right? Like you're consuming or the oils or the edibles, gummies, that sort of thing that has to go through the liver to metabolize that, the cannabinoids, just kind of keep an eye if you're taking methotrexate, right? Because it's also metabolized through the liver. So just kind of be aware that if you're being monitored, that you made your healthcare provider aware that you're using cannabis.
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
And I think there's something I really wanted to mention to you, Sharon, is about that awareness. So in 2021, we're still in the middle of the pandemic. And there was a survey done for cannabis patients here in Canada, 1,000 patients, 25% of them responded that they use it because of arthritis.
Oh, wow.
So out of like 1,000 Canadian patients that using cannabis, they tried it because they had arthritis, and 58% were female. And I think when I see that the female population, we're looking more into maybe more discreet options, right? We're not into perhaps smoking or kind of have like throwing that smell. So we're going towards more the edibles, the oils, some here in Canada is emerging the use of suppositories as well as a way of like pain relief. So I think women have kind of been left behind in terms of their research. Most of the research has been done in male and young male smoking THC over like 30%.
Oh, wow. Oh, what I was going to say, I forgot to say this earlier, but in the risks section, I do want to point out yet that smoking, if you have rheumatoid arthritis, you know, if you have rheumatoid arthritis in general, smoking is definitely not recommended because you already are predisposed to some lung issues. And actually smoking just tobacco is like considered a risk factor for just developing rheumatoid arthritis in the first place. So people are usually, you know, coached and told medically, you know, please try to get off of smoking if you can. So I'm assuming that would be something people with, you know, rheumatoid should know when it comes to deciding which form that you might want to try, whether we're talking about, you know, oils or oral, you know, gummies or smoking, right?
Yeah, the thing is like smoking also kills like most of the cannabinoids. Like you do get the hit, but it affects the availability of the cannabinoids that have the therapeutic effects. You get the high, you're doing it for like more like the personal use. You want kind of more the recreational side. It might be the option, but I support you. I agree with you when it comes in rheumatoid arthritis and even any other inflammatory kind of rheumatic disease, probably not advisable. Things are a little different with when you use the herb vaporizer because you're not combusting the flower. You're actually heating it up at a lower temperature and you're only getting the oils, heating up the oils. So sometimes the herb vaporizer could be beneficial for an instant relief, right? Like you just have a breakthrough pain or you just need to kind of get that kick to get you help you sleep. So you get the herb vaporizer, one or two puffs, but again, all guided hopefully by a healthcare provider that can really give you the right advice.
I love it. Yeah. And I think if we would summarize the major benefits to cannabis for somebody with an autoimmune form of arthritis, like rheumatoid, it would be in my head, I'm thinking from the research I've seen, pain, you know, reduced pain, reduced anxiety, better sleep. And then I put appetite on my little list because it is a good appetite stimulant. And not a lot of people are aware, but, you know, appetite loss and unintended weight loss are actually symptoms of uncontrolled rheumatoid arthritis. And they're ones that I personally experienced. So, would you agree with those main benefits?
Yes, add anything I do. Definitely. Okay. I like a mood booster as well.
Okay, great. Yeah.
That I definitely, I agree. I think those are like the main reasons why people seek a kind of cannabis and they find relief in those areas. There was always questions about CBD, like where can I find the best CBD, right?
Yes,
and just
yes,
like
yes.
that. So where is it? And I always get that. And I think there's is more problematic maybe in the US than we are here in Canada or maybe, right? Always check the laws in your country. But what is very important, I always kind of provide like the five things that you need to look into. Make sure that the product has clear labels. Right? Like what is the component? What are the cannabinoids kind of concentration? Where is it made? Does it have a certificate of analysis, right? So was it tested for pesticides, toxins? Does it have any additives, any solvents? Because you can take the CBD, but you're taking all those solvents. They're also toxic and pro-inflammatory. Was it using a safe extraction in, particularly if you can find someone like from an organic hemp kind of source, probably be better, but always kind of ask questions. So one resource that I always kind of direct people in the US is from Dr. Justin Solak. He's an excellent cannabis clinician in the US and his site is healer.com. And he's fantastic. Like he also he's kind of his education, like very basic, but he uses evidence-based, it's well-known in this area.
Okay, great. I'm putting all these links in the chat that you're mentioning, by the way.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's why it's just something to really keep in mind with the CBD. And something very interesting about CBD that For some people, CBD can cause a little bit of fatigue when they just started using it. So you're actually using it to fight fatigue, but then you might find that even when you're using it, you're feeling a little bit tired. So it's also in a way when your body start to kind of fine tune with that, with the CBD. It's like a supplement, right? For some people might use it for sleep, may work. For others, actually stimulate them. So that's why the use of cannabis is just, is a journey. It's just to, it really increases your self-awareness, self-care, and what works for you, what doesn't.
That's super, super helpful, especially to know that the fatigue might be a really short-term reaction. And that kind of makes sense to me. If you're kind of like, if it's affecting your anxiety levels, you might kind of become more like chilled out, so to speak, but then maybe that actually might make you feel a little tired, you know? So that totally makes sense. And then on the lines of like total beginner advice, I think it might be helpful to just list off what are the different forms that cannabis can take. Like you mentioned an herb vaporizer, smoking in various forms, like, and then of course gummies, like what else, what are the forms?
So yeah, so probably the methods of consumption, right? So we have the inhalation. So inhalation is like of this either smoking or through vape vaporizers. You also have the disposable vapes, which I'm not very comfortable with them. I think they have super concentrated effects. We still really don't know the long-term side effects. So personally, I prefer the herb vaporizers or softer. Someone as with Sjogren's, I find it like easier because it's less kind of drying than kind of using any other form of inhalation. And again, always breakthrough. The other one is ingestible, right? So we have the sublingual. So we use, there are the tinctures. So the classic tinctures we were made in alcohol, but there can be very irritating. You put it like a sublingual under your tongue, or you have like also the oils that you can kind of, the drops, you can use, you usually see the CBD oil drops and you can start kind of putting it sublingual. But some of it kind of gets ingested, right? Then you have capsules as well. That can be ingested, gummies, and even like homemade edibles. That's also kind of another source of like that can be ingested.
Yeah. Is when you make a homemade edible, is that where they take the oil and they make like cookies with it or?
Yeah. So you basically kind of create your like your own oil, kind of butter, that sort of thing. And then, but again, that's whole new, for another podcast.
Right.
Then you also have suppositories is another way of using cannabis, even vaginal, they're like, you know, like.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So yeah, Queen Victoria used to use cannabis suppositories to relieve PMS pain. Yeah.
You learn something every day.
And then even intravenous, but that's more like for research and stuff like that. And also the topical, right? Or transdermal. So you have the topical creams, but they also have transdermal patches. There are many, many ways of using cannabis because remember the endocannabinoid system is spread out all throughout our bodies.
Well, and it's really consistent with like current pain research as I understand it, which is that, you know, pain is a very complex phenomenon. I mean, it is processed, the sensation of pain is processed in the brain, but it involves so many different systems like our, our emotional centers and our everything is interrelated. In other words, just to put it, you know, more broadly, like how well you sleep will affect your mood, will affect your inflammation, will affect your pain, you know, everything cascades. And so sometimes we think about things as different, like, oh, what helps with my pain or what helps with my sleep or what, but really like when I do my Room to Thrive, you know, when I do my program and I'm teaching people about this stuff, it's always like, I like to separate them into little silos. Like, let's talk about sleep this week. But it's all really, I'm constantly saying it's all interrelated. Like how much you exercise is going to, the benefits of exercise are going to affect, you know, your sleep and your pain and your fatigue and your mood. And yeah. So anyway, just.
But it's true. And it's kind of worth noting that when it comes to research in cannabis and pain, so there are two particular things that they have noted is one, is the decrease in pain intensity. So sometimes you still may have the pain, right? But then I don't like to use those scales because I don't think they represent, but it's kind of, but at least the intensity of that pain. So much so that I had the experience once of going to the rheumatologist and I apparently had a flare up, but I had no pain. Then my rheumatologist started assessing. So I really want to kind of point that out, that if you're still going, continue with your regular checkups with a rheumatologist, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is that pain also, it reduces like the pain related interference, like with daily life. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a distraction. Like I guess that's in essence, it can be distracting. So you're not really focusing so much on the pain, because maybe your anxiety levels have come down, you feel a little bit more relaxed, so you're not really focusing on the pain that much. And honestly, that's a game for me if I'm not thinking about pain.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't know why this is occurring to me, but my husband and I once said like the goal, or I shouldn't say that he said, I said to him, like the goal for making money is like make enough money to where I don't have to worry about money. And that sounds, and this is going to sound out of left field, but it's my same goal with pain. I want to control my pain enough to where I'm not like constantly thinking about it and constantly worrying about it. So like you want to make enough money to where you're not having to every single day, every decision, like worry about money. And so I don't know, it relates to that, right? Like if your pain, you know, you might still have pain, but the degree of pain does not necessarily correlate to the degree of the impact on your quality of life. So I think that's super, super, super helpful. And yeah, I think I've been putting down, writing down as we've been saying this or typing down a lot of resources, but in terms of getting started with like literally finding a place that dispenses it, I mean, it's hard to say because the different areas and there's different, you know, there's a different laws, but do you recommend like first, of course you recommended talking to your medical team. Is that something that like a nurse or team could be able to advise you on like where to find a good reputable place?
Well, you know, hopefully, I know in Canada, sometimes it could be, I always recommend that, you know, go to a cannabis clinic and get a medical document. Now it's very easy, right? You can even do it online. There's several like cannabis clinics. One in particular here in Toronto is called like Summer Tree. And I have no affiliation with them. But what I know is that there's a rheumatologist, Dr. Caroline Lindholt, who actually has experience in cannabis sciences, obviously rheumatology. So her guidance is golden. I really like her. And I think she's kind of one of a kind. Maybe there's another one in BC. But in general, the cannabis clinicians through the cannabis clinics here in Canada could give you some guidance, but sometimes can be very confusing and patients get frustrated and they just give up or they go to the dispensary. And that's the reality. And that's the gap that we have here in Canada. Mm-hmm. In the US, I probably said the safest way is to see if you can access a medical marijuana card. But all the laws, it really differs in every state. They have their own qualifying conditions. But I can say that if you can find the best to get the best guidance through a qualified care practitioner would probably be the best. Mm-hmm. I cannot really say go to this dispensary and get this right. And this strain. I think that would be responsible of me to say that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And that is, we both put up on our Instagram stories, you know, asking people for their questions. And yeah, one of the questions was in general, are there strains that are well known for being like better for one thing than the other? Like one person asked, what's the best strain for pain? And the other person actually asked, what's the best strain for sleep? Is that, or is it really just the person dependent?
I think like we discussed it, it's person dependent, but also remember the profile that you're looking for, right? So then what is the CBD to like THC ratio? What are the terpenes? Some of the terpenes also kind of modulate the effect of the cannabis per se. So if you have like terpenes like a myrcene, which is also found like that is kind of connected to the couch lock effect. So it makes you sleepy. So that probably better for your sleep, right? If you have products that contain CBN, which is another cannabinoid that has more sedative effects, then that will probably be more effective. But then if you're looking more into reducing inflammation, you're going to go for a cultivar or a product that has beta-caryophyllene, which actually directly interacts with the kind of endocannabinoid system. Whoa. So again,
that's a lot. Yeah, you have to talk to some. Basically, what I'm getting from this is that you need to find someone who really knows what they're doing and knows about all these micro differences to help you select the right one to start. And then maybe just, you know, trial like any of our medications and any of our, you know, pain relief techniques or just lifestyle techniques. There's trial and error, right? When you start a new exercise program, there's trial and error. Maybe I'll try walking for 15 minutes on flat ground today. If I'm not too fatigued and I'm not feeling bad after that, tomorrow I'll try 20 minutes and then add a hill in there. Like, oops, that was too much. You know, so you just have to, yeah, sometimes it's about trying. And again, all of this, there's a medical disclaimer on all of my podcasts and all my content, but just to reiterate, this is you know, to make sure to say it explicitly, this is not medical advice, individual advice. We're just kind of providing, or we generously of me saying Christina is providing, you know, and I'm trying to provide some basic, you know, just education, because it can be such an overwhelming topic about, you know, what is cannabis? What are the benefits potentially? And yeah, someone else wrote in, you know, oh, I know cannabis helps me, but I can't use it because I'm working in healthcare and it's probably just against the law, like where they're working. So I just want to acknowledge that it's not something that everyone's going to be able to even try, just given where you live. And they asked, I guess I said, do you have any advice? But I don't really know what advice to give. I mean, you just kind of can't do it, right? I mean, I'm a rule follower, so I'm like, don't do it.
Get around it. Or like, I cannot really suggest, oh, you have to take this, you know, drink something and it's just going to disappear.
Right? Okay, the antidote. Yeah. Okay.
No, I think it's more about education and raising awareness, even at the legislature, right? Kind of levels. Yeah. It's at the government levels. It's just like, you know, stop the stigma, and the patients are suffering. They're seeing benefits. Why are you limiting the access? Why are you setting up all these barriers? Yeah. Why are you setting them up for failure when you've seen there's evidence when patients are reducing prescription, right? Drug prescriptions, reducing opioid use. So why can you kind of focus on those maybe positive areas that are benefiting patients, right?
It makes perfect sense to me. I mean, unless, yeah, it's like, there's so few pain management options out there that don't have like a lot of, you know, downsides. We want to have all the tools in our toolbox. And I wanted to make sure, and I mentioned earlier those major benefits like pain, sleep, anxiety. I forgot to say inflammation, you know, reducing inflammation, which again, all is interrelated to that. I want to make sure to give you a chance to talk about your HEAL program, speaking of inflammation, and how people can kind of learn more from you.
Well, I think I'm probably one of a kind, I can say. I don't know. I don't want to be sound kind of talking about it, but
no,
what I
great.
Really want to see is, because I explained earlier, is that I come to realize that, first of all, we need to nourish our endocannabinoid system. So we had that system that even beyond cannabis, there are so many other ways that we can nourish it. So it helps us to stay in balance, right? So that's what I created, that the HEAL pathway program, that is really going to tell you how to elevate your anti-inflammatory lifestyle for when you're living with chronic pain. And so I kind of created this step. So the first is an 8-week program. So the first 4 weeks, there's no cannabis involved. So if you just want to know about like anti-inflammatory nutrition and lifestyle, that is for you, right? Not everyone wants to know about cannabis. So the first step, we want to heal that relationship, your relationship with food, then heal with an anti-inflammatory nutrition, heal your gut, heal with supplements, if necessary, right? I'm not. And actually here is when we can introduce cannabis as a potential supplement. That's kind of my view around this.
Yeah, yeah.
Then if you want to dive into more how cannabis can kind of be incorporated into that wellness toolkit, then on week 5, we'll talk about the role of cannabis for wellness, pain, and sleep. A little bit of canna nutrition. So it's that combination of nutrition and cannabis, a cooking demo, and then putting it all together.
I love it. That's so great. And then where can people learn more about that? I'll put, of course, it in the notes, but.
I'm going to be talking more about the program. I'm launching it on June 4th, if everything kind of goes well, but I'm really working tirelessly on it. You can find me at arthritis.pain.dietitian. Remember, my original Instagram account was hacked. And also, it was a pain. So my apologies for everyone who's getting weird messages.
I'm so sorry.
This one is fully protected. Also on my website of www.arthritisdietitian.com. And I know Cheryl is going to share the links.
Yeah, no, it's great. You're providing a service that so many people want and need. And I want to actually say something that we said in the previous episode you were on, the panel about nutrition and the difference between a registered dietitian and like a quote and a nutritionist is that a registered dietitian is somebody who's had a lot of rigorous training and you have a license and you're governed by like a board versus anyone in the world can just call themselves a nutritionist. Like it's not like a protected thing.
But we have to kind of mention that I know in the U.S. they have the nutritionists, like registered dietitian and nutritionist, that like in certain states,
right.
and even here in Canada, there's a couple of provinces where they still protect the title. But you want to look for like the red flags that are all holistic nutritionists where they only complete like 6 months or a six-month course. Mm-hmm. So we actually can have like a medical nutritional therapy, right? We can understand medical health conditions. We have work in clinical settings. So it's really what regulated health professions, and we're here to protect the public, not to kind of make any false promises. So
yeah. So I just, that's something like I just try to really promote the programs that are based on like valid, you know, evidence-based information. Plus I just think it's a great mix, you know, taking your personal patient experience and then blending it with, you know, with your professional. Obviously that's what I do too. So I guess I'm biased, but, is there anything, this has been so helpful. Like, is there anything else you'd want to share with the audience about this topic or anything else?
Well, you know what? I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. You can probably just take one thing that I will say, like a cannabis, you use it as any other product, even a supplement could be it's not completely harmless, right? Just as cannabis, just assess as any other supplement or medication that you're taking and make sure that you are involving your healthcare provider in these decisions. And you know, tell them that you're using it, tell them that you want to use it, but don't keep it to yourself just in case if there's any adverse side effect or interaction, then the healthcare provider is aware of it and they can help you.
Yeah, that's super, super helpful. Yeah. And I think as the years go on, the stigma is, you know, reducing more and more. And I know even, the Arthritis Foundation in the United States has put out some great resources on CBD and cannabis, and the American College of Rheumatology is I think going to put out one later this year. So, you know, I think in like a decade ago or two decades ago, people were kind of scared to talk about it, but now it's definitely the iceberg's kind of tipping, like you said, or that's the tip of the iceberg. There we go. I get my metaphors right. I'm always mixing metaphors. Well, this has been so helpful. Thank you so much again.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yay. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Room to Thrive, a membership and support community where you'll learn how to develop your own Thrive toolbox so you can live a full life despite your rheumatic disease or chronic illness. Learn more in the show notes or by going to www.myarthritislife.net. You can also connect with me on my social media accounts on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and even TikTok. Check out the links in the show notes.